Welcome back to the Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. My voice is all tight. Ever have a tight voice? Like, I feel like my voice is like a pitch higher than it usually is right now. Usually I got a nice low voice. Come on, voice, what are you doing? Welcome back to the Hemingway List, you guys. Weird start. It's the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. I'm recording this a little earlier than usual, so if your comment didn't make it through to the episode, because the cutoff was a few hours earlier, because I'm recording it earlier, I apologise for that. But yeah, I've got a bit of a busy night, busy weekend ahead of me, so I thought I'd get this done nice and early, and then I can prep for tomorrow and try to get a nice early night as well. Tomorrow being Saturday here in Australia, and the next day being Sunday is Supernova, which is Australia's sort of version of Comic-Con. And so it's Melbourne Supernova, and me and young Aaron Huggins will be there promoting, well, mostly promoting Aaron's book, his new book, Live a Little, also promoting my first two novels, are fantasy novels. So there's a pretty good crossover of audience there at Supernova, so I'll sell a few of my books too. But that's, I am very much looking forward to that. I have been looking forward to that for a very long time. It's Aaron's first convention. Not only is it his first convention, you know, to sell books at all, he's never been to like a Supernova or a Comic-Con or anything like that. And I know it's going to be like right up his alley. Like, I know he's going to love it because he's a sci-fi nerdy kid. So yeah, he's going to love it. So I'm very excited for that. But at the very same time today, for completely unrelated reasons, out of my control reasons, kind of sucked. So I had a sucky day, which I won't go into. You don't need to know why, but it's just like, oh man, like the suckiness of today I know is going to be in the back of my mind for the next, well, probably for the next, who knows. You know when something happens and you're like, damn, like that sucks. And you know it's going to plague you for a little while. But definitely over the next few days, it's going to be like, oh, I've got to keep that out of my head and just have a bit of fun with this thing. Anyway, all that combined means I'm going to do the podcast nice and early, get some R&R, eat some takeaway Chinese food and watch a movie. Just to sort of like get my head right. Sometimes you got to do that, don't you? When you have a sucky day. Still, at the end of a sucky day, or three quarters of the way through a sucky day in this case, no better place to be for me than here with you guys talking books, talking literature, talking Dostoevsky. All right, so today we're talking about book 4, chapter 2. The questions I asked you guys were these. Geez, is this guy the worst dad ever or what? Why does Alyosha allow him to speak so poorly of his brothers? And thirdly, Alyosha is so involved more and more in this mess. What outcome do you think he is seeking? I think what I was getting at there with that question is like, why doesn't he just walk away from all this? Like, what's his investment? They are his family, but at the same time, he seems to be more invested in these problems than his brothers and his father are. He's the one doing all the running around here, so... I don't know. It's kind of like, if that was me, I don't know, at some point I'd be like, you know what, you guys sort this out. Like, this has got nothing to do with me. Anyway. I am Norwegian, said my first thought when Theodore mentioned bribing Dmitri to keep him away, that this has already happened, which would explain the 1,500 rubles Dmitri somehow got his hands on the night before, but I can't imagine a scenario where this makes sense. Question one, is this guy the worst dad ever? Yes. And he just keeps revealing himself to be worse. Early on in the book, I assumed he had some redeemable things about him. His love for Alyosha, his outbursts of sweet words, his respect for Ivan, something. But invariably, he contradicts whatever you might have assumed good about him with some other outburst. Why does Alyosha allow him to speak so poorly of his brothers? The author's note did mention that most would find it puzzling that Alyosha was the hero of this story. In the beginning, we only get a description of him, and it is very easy to buy into his goodness of character and action. More and more now, though, we see why the author wrote that he wrote what he wrote in the introduction. It's beginning to become easier to see Alyosha more as a naive and ineffectual. Though I guess that's a common observation of good and holy men in the midst of struggle. I think Alyosha views his father's words more as an artifact of Fyodor's distortion instead of them being the words of an evil-natured man, blaming the affliction rather than the man who is afflicted for the actions and words of the man. It's a slippery slope, isn't it? To some degree, that is merciful of you and right to do so. When someone has an affliction and they act in accordance with it, you got to almost sympathize with them. But then at a certain degree, it's like, am I doing more to help this person than they're doing to help themselves or me, or would do for me? Ineffectual, what a word, right? Something about that word strikes me. I think it's probably, you know, words that are the most striking to you are usually the ones that you fear most of being, you know. I'd hate to be called that, or I'd hate to feel that way. And I know the feeling of feeling like nothing you do has an impact, and try as you might, you can't make a difference. Ineffectual. Jeez, what a word. That word kind of like, it's like it's resonating with some kind of deep insecurity that I have about not being able to be an effective participant in the world. Golly. You don't see that word very often. Let's see what it says when I define it. I'm getting stuck on it now. It really has like hit me in a spot. Ineffectual.
Ineffectual.
Not producing any or the desired effect. Yep, as it sounds. Let's move on before this becomes like a therapy session. Question 3. Alyosha is involved more and more in this mess. What outcome do you think he is seeking? I don't think he wants much more than harmony in his family. He wants them to be happy and good. I'm curious to see if he's going to take a more active role or if he will continue to sit mostly silent. I see Alyosha's response, says Mango Mondo, or lack thereof, to his father's outbursts as stemming from a deep sympathy. Alyosha knows as well as anyone his father is not a good man, but believes he can be redeemed. Also, honour thy mother and father. I might be naive, but it's also about his faith, which I'm sure his father will continue to test. Laura Y. Stitch said the previous chapter explained how one of the teachings of the monks is that they need to see themselves as worse than those on the outside. So it would make sense that Alyosha does not blame his father. I think also he's the kind of guy that if he did go, you know what, this is not my problem, sort it out amongst yourselves, I think he would feel too guilty for having said that. And I don't know how right that is as an attitude, because at a certain point, when it comes to helping other people, you know, obviously you do your best, but you can't do too much that it becomes detrimental to your well-being. Right, because then you're impacting your own ability to do more good in the world. So where does he draw that line, poor Alyosha? Tekrific said, until I Am Norwegian mentioned it yesterday, it had escaped me that part one actually means day one. Whoosh moment. Yeah, actually I didn't put that together either, but that's interesting. I wonder if part two will be in line with part, like a day two. So we're starting day two, and this whole chapter felt like it was only there to reinforce our aversion, which by now is considerable, towards Fyodor Pavlovich. Fyodor is such a strange character, immature, vile, buffoonish, a drunkard, and a man-whore extraordinaire. The contrast between him and Alyosha is almost comical. Alyosha just lets Fyodor do Fyodor. He chooses his fight and only contradicts his father when he feels it's absolutely necessary. He's trying out the Zosima philosophy, i.e. practicing honesty and active love. The active love so far looks more like being a messenger boy between very self-involved people. It's exhausting just reading, walking the path as Alyosha does. Must be draining, but perhaps he's invigorated, trying to ameliorate the situation for everyone. You know, I wouldn't think he is invigorated. I would think it's more of like a stress response, right? He's in a bit of a catch-22, because if it is the case, like I said, where he doesn't feel that morally he can walk away. He'd feel too guilty if he abandoned them with all these struggles they've got. So he can't do that, but at the same time, doing the opposite and helping and getting involved is also, like you said, exhausting just to read. And so he is in that catch-22, a bit of a moral dilemma, although he doesn't seem to be in a dilemma because he's kind of made up his mind he's going to be the errand boy and run around back and forth for these people. He deserves a little better than that, wouldn't you say? If he said, you know what, you guys deserve each other. You idiots deserve each other. I'm out. Would you begrudge him that? Would you think he's a quitter? Or would you go, fair enough, dude. Take care of yourself first. Samurai Stars says, Alyosha just lets Fyodor do Fyodor. He chooses his fights. It's exhausting just reading, walking the path. Oh, sorry, this is quoting the previous one. Samurai Stars said, I've mentioned before that I know someone who Fyodor reminds me of. Really, just letting them do them is all you can do. This type of people just don't listen. And really, you can't control anyone else anyway. They decide what they do and don't do. You can certainly offer advice, but in reality, they most likely aren't going to listen to you. So after a point, you realize it's not worth bothering with. They're going to explode spectacularly, and it will be their problem to deal with, not yours. It is initially draining to deal with, but after you let go of trying to change things and just set hard boundaries with how much you let them affect your life, it gets a lot easier. You know, Summer Stars, I appreciate you saying that because this, you know, you've probably realized by now that this bad thing that happened today with me is a bit of that. It's a little bit of that, like... which is why I'm Team Alyosha, because there's someone in my life similar to what you said who reminds me of Fyodor. So selfish, so this kind of narcissistic thing, right? This self-centeredness or whatever you want to call it, or however you want to. It's hard to put your finger on it, but they're going to continue to make poor decisions which affect the people around them in a negative way. And you can try to offer their advice, offer them advice, or offer them, you know, a path to getting healthy if that's what they need, if they're making these decisions due to poor mental health or whatever's happening. But I don't know, you can't do everything, can you? You can't. Like at a certain point, yeah, it's a tricky thing though, isn't it? Because you don't want to be the person who gives up on them. Ah, tricky, 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 tricky. Checkrific said, they're going to explode spectacularly and it will be their problem to deal with, not yours. Hopefully, is Checkrific's response to that. Hopefully that happens. Well, do you say that though? In the case of someone like Fyodor, who does horrible things and deserves whatever he gets from that. You know, he deserves... for things to, not, I'm not going to say punishment, you know, but he does, if it goes poorly, then it's like, well, that's because of your poor actions. But then Alyosha, like we said before, doesn't blame him for his actions. He blames his distortion, as he calls it, for lack of a better word, because I suppose the word, you know, narcissistic personality disorder didn't exist back then. So they call it a distortion, or, you know, demons or whatever they want to try to figure it is. It's really difficult when you know someone like that, and especially when you like love someone like that, when they're close, like it's your father in this case, to find where to draw the line, where at some point you've got to be like, I know your emotions are beyond you, and I know your decision-making is impacted by a mental health issue, but you are still responsible for your actions on some level. Are you? That's the question, are they? Because people get off murder in trial by pleading insanity, right? So it's like, oh, you know, you were insane at the time, so you're innocent. So, oh man, it's just, it's the kind of thing that doesn't warrant thinking about. You never get anywhere trying to figure this thing out, do you? What is your opinion on this. Guys, I might even ask this after today's chapter. Where do you stand on that issue of where to draw the line between people being responsible for their actions or saying those actions are to a degree out of their control because of, a runaway mental disorder of whatever nature it is? Techrific said, hopefully the problem does explode spectacularly and become their problem, not yours. So almost like they get their just desserts. And sometimes I feel that way too with my personal thing that's happening, where it's like, you deserve everything that horrible that happens because of the horrible things you've done. But at the other same time, I know that it's beyond their control, and I know they truly don't want to do the things they do. So, rough day for me. And it's funny, this chapter, maybe, when you're in your head about something, sometimes you can just sort of relate anything back to what's happening in your own life. But I really do feel like this chapter and this discussion was just so tailored to what happened to me today. Because, Fyodor and his shitty decisions just remind me so much of the person who's troubling me at the moment. There's also a degree of sadness, when you see these people ruining their own lives and recognizing that there's a limited amount that you can do, and even to do that limited amount will be a huge negative impact on you. It's going to take a lot of your energy just to make that tiny little, potentially make a tiny little difference for them that, like you said, they're still going to do what they're going to do. So, what was I saying? It's sad. So it's sad to look at him and go, there's just not much I can do. And if even the little I can do, I don't know if I can do it because it's too much. It's too difficult and it's too sad. So I don't know if I've got the mental, I don't know if I can Alyosha it and be like, yeah, I'll take this on, I'll fix it for you. It's like, I got to tap out at some point. It's too much for me to bear. Anyway. Too personal. Too personal today. I'm sorry, I got a lot on my mind. I Am Norwegian said, this is referring to the hum problem. The mysterious hum problem, which I don't know what's going on there still. I'm using the Zoom microphone, which is cool because I can go in stereo mode, which is fun. But I Am Norwegian said, hey, I use Reaper too. That's an audio software. I looked through the built-in plugins and tested this with the hum of my guitar to make sure. Add the rear fur into your effects chain. Look up mode EQ. This is going to be technical jargon. Essentially, he's saying you can build a noise profile so it knows what noise to listen to. What's the noise in the audio file that you don't like? And then you isolate it and remove it, and it shouldn't affect the rest of how it sounds. That's the Band-Aid solution, and I think that would work too. I don't think that's less trouble than just temporarily using this other microphone, though, is it? I don't know. I think I'm going to stick with this microphone and just try to fix that problem. So, I responded to this in text. I'll just read my comment rather than paraphrasing. I responded saying, today, my kettle died. I don't know what happened to it, but it's completely dead. Definitely something going on with the power in my house. I reckon it's all connected. Adjusts tinfoil hat. Maybe I'll hit the main switch and give it all the old-fashioned hard reset. X-Files theme music. I don't know. I find it funny that my kettle blew up today, or yesterday, or at some point. And my computer is making weird grounding issues, noises. Yeah, so what's going on here? What's going on with the electricity in my house? Who knows? Hopefully it'll just sort itself out. And sometimes things just sort themselves out. That would be nice. Can that please be the thing that happens? Techrific said he liked the new stereoscopic audio experience. He says, if you can muster the extra hassle, I would say, keep the microphone. I will for now. I will for the foreseeable future. Yeah, it's not that much extra bother. It adds another minute or two to the process of putting up the podcast. But hey, that's not too bad. All right, that's the discussion of this chapter. Discussed. Well done. We did it. Now let's move forward and read book. Wait, what book are we up to? I'm making a mess of my whole thing. We're up to part two, which is book four, chapter three. Good. It's called A Meeting with the Schoolboys. Thank goodness he did not ask me about Grushenka, thought Alyosha as he left his father's house and turned towards Madame Holokov's. Or I might have had to tell him of my meeting with Grushenka yesterday. Alyosha felt painfully that since yesterday both combatants had renewed their energies and that their hearts had grown hard again. Father is spiteful and angry. He's made some plan and will stick to it. And what of Dmitri? He too will be harder than yesterday. He too must be spiteful and angry. And he too, no doubt, has made some plan. Oh, I must succeed in finding him today, whatever happens. But Alyosha had not long to meditate. An incident occurred on the road, which, though apparently of little consequence, made a great impression on him. Just after he had crossed the square and turned the corner, coming out into Mihailovsky Street, which is divided by a small ditch from the high street, our whole town is intersected by ditches, he saw a group of schoolboys between the ages of 9 and 12 at the bridge. They were going home from school, some with their bags on their shoulders, others with leather satchels slung across them, some in short jackets, others in little overcoats. Some even had those high boots with creases around the ankles, such as little boys spoilt by rich fathers love to wear. The whole group was talking eagerly about something, apparently holding a council. Alyosha had never, from his Moscow days, been able to pass children without taking notice of them, and although he was particularly fond of children of 3 or thereabout, he liked schoolboys of 10 and 11 too. And so, anxious as he was today, he wanted at once to turn aside to talk to them. He looked into their excited, rosy faces and noticed at once that all the boys had stones in their hands. Behind the ditch, some 30 paces away, there was another schoolboy standing by a fence. He too had a satchel at his side. He was about 10 years old, pale, delicate-looking, and with sparkling black eyes. He kept an attentive and anxious watch on the other 6, obviously his schoolfellows with whom he had just come out of school, but with whom he had evidently had a feud. Alyosha went up and, addressing a fair, curly-headed, rosy boy in a black jacket, observed, "When I used to wear a satchel like yours, I always used to carry it on my left side so that to have my right hand free, but you've got yours on your right side, so it will be awkward for you to get at it." Alyosha had no art or premeditation in beginning with this practical remark, but it is the only way for a grown-up person to get at once into confidential relations with a child, or still more with a group of children. One must begin in a serious business-like way so as to be on a perfectly equal footing. Alyosha understood it by instinct. "But he's left-handed," another, a fine, healthy-looking boy of 11, answered promptly. All the others stared at Alyosha. "He even throws stones with his left hand," observed a third. At that instant a stone flew into the group, but only just grazed the left-handed boy, though it was well and vigorously thrown by the boy standing on the other side of the ditch. "Give it to him. Hit him back, Smurov," they all shouted. But Smurov, the left-handed boy, needed no telling and at once revenged himself. He threw a stone, but it missed the boy and hit the ground. The boy on the other side of the ditch, the pocket of whose coat was visibly bulging with stones, flung another stone at the group. This time it flew straight at Alyosha and hit him painfully on the shoulder. "He aimed it at you. He meant it for you. You are Karamazov, Karamazov," the boy shouted, laughing. "Come, all, throw at him at once." And 6 stones flew at the boy. One struck the boy on the head and he fell down, but at once leapt up and began ferociously returning the fire. both sides threw stones incessantly. Many of the group had their pockets full too. "What are you about? Aren't you ashamed? 6 against 1? Why, you'll kill him," cried Alyosha. He ran forward and met the flying stones to screen the solitary boy. 3 or 4 ceased throwing for a minute. "He began first," cried a boy in a red shirt in an angry childish voice. "He is a beast. He stabbed Krasotkin in class the other day with a penknife. It bled. Krasotkin wouldn't tell tales, but he must be thrashed. "But what for? I suppose you tease him." "There, he sent a stone in your back again. He knows you," cried the children. "It's you he is throwing at now, not us. Come, all of you, at him again. Don't miss, Smirov." And again a fire of stones, and a very vicious one, began. The boy on the other side of the ditch was hit in the chest, and he screamed, began to cry, and ran away uphill towards Mihailovsky Street. They all shouted, "Aha! He is funking. He is running away. Wisp of tow." "You don't know what a beast he is, Karamazov. Killing is too good for him," said the boy in the jacket, with flashing eyes. He seemed to be the eldest. "What's wrong with him?" asked Alyosha. "Is he a telltale or what?" The boys looked at one another, as though derisively. "Are you going that way to Mihailovsky?" the same boy went on. "Catch him up. You see, he's stopped again. He is waiting and looking at you." "He is looking at you," the other boys chimed in. "You ask him. Does he like a dishevelled wisp of tow? Do you hear? Ask him that." There was a great general burst of laughter. Alyosha looked at them, and they at him. "Don't go near him, he'll hurt you," cried Smirov in a warning voice. "I shan't ask him about the wisp of tow, for I expect you tease him with that question somehow, but I'll find out from him why you hate him so." "Find out, then, find out," cried the boys, laughing. Alyosha crossed the bridge and walked uphill by the fence, straight towards the boy. "You'd better look out," the boy called after him. "He won't be afraid of you. He will stab you in a minute, on the sly, as he did Krasotkin." The boy waited for him without budging. Coming up to him, Alyosha was facing him, a child of about 9 years old. He was an undersized, weakly boy, with a thin, pale face, with large, dark eyes that gazed at him vindictively. He was dressed in a rather shabby old overcoat, which he had monstrously outgrown. His bare arms stuck out beyond their sleeves. There was a large patch on the right knee of his trousers, and in his right boot, just at the toe, there was a big hole in the leather, carefully blackened with ink. Both the pockets of his great coat were weighed down with stones. Alyosha stopped 2 steps in front of him, looking inquiringly at him. The boy, seeing at once from Alyosha's eyes that he wouldn't beat him, became less defiant and addressed him first. "I am alone, and there are 6 of them. I'll beat them all alone," he said suddenly, with flashing eyes. "I think one of the stones must have hurt you badly," observed Alyosha. "But I hit Smirov in the head," cried the boy. "They told me that you know me and that you threw a stone at me on purpose," said Alyosha. The boy looked darkly at him. "I don't know you. Do you know me?" Alyosha continued. "Let me alone," the boy cried irritably. But he did not move, as though he were expecting something, and again there was a vindictive light in his eyes. "Very well, I am going," said Alyosha. "Only I don't know you, and I don't tease you. They told me how they tease you, but I don't want to tease you. Goodbye." "Monk in silk trousers," cried the boy, following Alyosha with the same vindictive and defiant expression, and he threw himself into an attitude of defence, feeling sure that Alyosha would fall upon him. But Alyosha turned, looked at him, and walked away. He had not gone 3 steps before the biggest stone the boy had in his pocket hit him painfully blow. Hit him a painful blow in the back. "So you'll hit a man from behind. They tell the truth, then, when they say that you attack on the sly," said Alyosha, turning round again. This time the boy threw a stone savagely right at Alyosha's face, but Alyosha just had time to guard himself, and the stone struck him on the elbow. "Aren't you ashamed? What have I done to you?" he cried. The boy waited in silent defiance, certain that now Alyosha would attack him. Seeing that even now he would not, his rage was like a wild beast's. He flew at Alyosha himself, and before Alyosha had time to move, the spiteful child had seized his left hand with both of his and bit his middle finger. He fixed his teeth in it, and it was 10 seconds before he let go. Alyosha cried out with pain and pulled his finger away with all his might. The child let go at last and retreated to his former distance. Alyosha's finger had been bitten badly, to the bone, close to the nail. It began to bleed. Alyosha took out his handkerchief and bound it tightly round his injured hand. He was a full minute bandaging it. The boy stood waiting all the time. At last Alyosha raised his gentle eyes and looked at him. "Very well," he said. "You see how badly you've bitten me. That's enough, isn't it? Now tell me, what have I done to you?" The boy stared in amazement. "Though I don't know you, and it's the very first time I've seen you," Alyosha went on in the same serenity, "yet I must have done something to you. You wouldn't have hurt me like this for nothing. So what have I done? How have I wronged you? Tell me." Instead of answering, the boy broke into a loud, tearful wail and ran away. Alyosha walked slowly after him towards Mihailovsky Street. And for a long time he saw the child running in the distance as fast as ever, not turning his head, and no doubt still keeping up his tearful wail. He made up his mind to find out as soon as he had time, and to solve this mystery. Just now he had not the time. All right, there we go. That is chapter 3 complete. A very interesting chapter. A very fast-paced, well-paced chapter. We've finally got some just straight-up narration. I love it. I love it. I love to see this child who obviously is struggling with something, but it's not just told to you what he's struggling with, like in the previous chapters where they kind of just like, here's my philosophy, and they spend 3 pages just telling you what they believe. Whereas this boy, we don't know what this boy believes or what's going on in his head. And to me, that's a way more interesting method of giving a character depth than to just have them spill out their inner philosophy. Very, very cool. I enjoyed that chapter. Please head over to reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist if you would like to have your say about this chapter. Or about any of the general discussion we've been having. The discussion's gone off the rails a little bit into the territory of, like today, talking about sort of helping people who have these disorders and what's the best thing to do. And that's an interesting topic to discuss. Previously, we've talked about people's shadow selves and the archetypes and Jung and Nietzsche and Freud and that lot, that whole lot. So please head over to the subreddit. Continue the conversation. I look very much forward to seeing what you've all got to say. Look after yourselves, everybody. Thank you for listening today, and I will see you tomorrow.